Welcome to Home Ground. I'm Brian Kahn. In the 1970s, the newly formed Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, OPEC, dramatically drove up the price of oil. At the time, America imported 30% of the oil we used. Outraged, our government pledged to sharply reduce that dependence, so that now, 30 years later, we import 55%. And the Department of Energy predicts 20 years from now, we'll be importing two-thirds. At a minimum, it's fair to say that rhetoric has not been matched by action. There are numerous alternative energy sources that have received a lot of public discussion. One that hasn't is SSP, Space Solar Power. Eric Hoffert, who is CEO of a company called Versatility, knows something about that. Eric, many thanks for joining us on Home Ground.
It's my pleasure.
Before we start talking about SSP, which seems to me like it's sounding somewhat similar to an engine oil additive, tell us where you grew up. What was your education?
Brian, I grew up in Brooklyn, born in 1962, 27 years in Brooklyn, and then out to San Francisco for about 11 years, and have just recently returned in the last 2.5 years to the East Coast. I'm back on the East Coast. It's a good thing.
What did your folks do? What kind of education did you have?
My father is a physics professor and is also a researcher in the area of global climate change. And my mother is a psychologist. And my education is more on the technology side. I have a Bachelor of Science in Computer Science from New York University, Bachelor of Science in Mechanical Engineering with an aerospace specialty from Cooper Union.
I don't know what Cooper Union is.
Cooper Union is actually quite interesting. It's the only free university in the United States. It was founded in 1860.
What do you mean free?
There's no tuition.
There's got to be a hitch.
Well, the hitch is maybe just the story. It was founded in 1860 by Peter Cooper, who was a very wealthy entrepreneur and felt that free education should be something that could be possible. And it was targeted at engineering, art, and architecture, which are the three schools that exist there today. It is quite remarkable as a free university. It's free for all 4 years of schooling.
That's an amazing story, and I assume competition is intense.
It's very intense. You know, it's right up there with MIT and Stanford and some of the really CMU.
You said your education was more on the technology side.
It has to happen. There has to be a shift, and I would argue that one of the ways that the shift can occur is actually with greater public support and understanding, which is why we were interested in participating in this program to make this happen.
Okay, now that all sounds good, but let me be devil's advocate here. First, I don't dispute at all that there are interests that benefit from the status quo and will work to maintain the status quo and use these resources as long as they're available and use political leverage to reduce investment in alternatives that might undermine their situation. I understand that. However, I just read in the New York Times within the last 3 or 4 months, Europe has invested very heavily in wind power, big time. And there are plans by, I think, 2010 or to have 15% of their power generated by wind, something of significance. The American government, and I think not just American government, internationally, there have been heavy investments in trying to develop fusion power. Billions of dollars.
Tens of billions.
Okay.
That's correct.
So somebody's willing to invest in alternatives. Why not this one as opposed to that one?
It's an excellent question. And at the heart of the matter is still a tremendous lack of awareness of the possibilities that are offered by space-based solar power. Like any new alternative source of energy that is yet unproven, there are concerns. There are issues. There are high costs to develop this. I mean, look at fusion, which has so far not yet actually come to a viable alternative source of energy.
It hasn't worked yet.
It hasn't worked yet. This is the many high tens of billions of investment. And there will be a large investment to bring space-based solar power to a commercial level of applicability that would be on the scale to start with initial demonstrations of tens of hundreds of millions of dollars, and then, you know, to take it to the next level would be in the billions to tens of billions of dollars. So there's a financial piece to this. And you have to find people who are high enough up that become advocates that are going to make that kind of massive funding flow. And part of that is public support, public interest, scientific interest. That's one piece, and then the other is there are safety concerns because people are not familiar yet with the notion of microwaves as a way to transmit power, even though technically it's been done.
All right, let's talk about safety for starters. We are well aware of a lot of the negative environmental impacts of the present situation of generating heat and greenhouse gases and pollution, this kind of stuff. What are the risks, perceived or actual risks or potential risks of this transmission of large amounts of, I guess, electricity through the Earth's atmosphere down to rectennas or whatever you call them?
That's correct. There's more of a perceived inhibitor than there is an actual inhibitor going on here. And I think people, through public perception with microwave ovens and cell phones, have concerns, but many of those concerns really aren't well-grounded. And those concerns, at some level, we believe, to date, have resulted in not as rapid a progress as we should be having with space-based solar power. The reality is, if you look at the research, the amount of microwaves that come to the Earth when you're transmitting power from space can be the same or less than the amount of microwave radiation that you have just outside the antenna of a small handheld cell phone. And the reason for that is when the power beam comes from the space to Earth, it spreads out dramatically. There's the laws of diffraction in physics that govern what happens to microwaves. And so that level is very much, you know, we have, what, 100 million, billion people using cell phones, you know, now or soon. People are comfortable with that. There should be a level of comfort with what we're describing here today. We feel confident that there are minimal health effects based on a huge body of research that's been done by universities and aerospace labs and so on around the world. But it is something that is a concern for people until they understand it and until they see it demonstrated on a broader scale.
Now, you mentioned another side of it was the need over time for substantial investment. Some of that's public, some of that at a certain point becomes private. Let's talk about that aspect of it. Let's start with the public sector side. That is invariably some sort of political process, meaning interest groups influence public decisions, public policy decisions. And I may be asking you a question that's not in your field of expertise, but if you go back over the 25 years and you look at public sector investments in alternative energy, are there any trends that are relevant to this issue?
I think the trend that's relevant to this issue is there has been a growing amount of public support for terrestrial solar and wind in particular. And the amount of investment that's starting to flow into those sectors is definitely growing. There, in particular, as you mentioned, wind actually is getting a great deal of attention. And both terrestrial solar and wind have now become multi-billion dollar alternative energy markets. And
so it's interesting. We don't know that generally, but when you talk with folks in the business, it's big business.
It's big, although if you look at it as a fraction of the world's overall energy resources, it's actually a very, very small percentage today, but it's projected to grow more substantially over the coming, you know, 20 to 50 years. But the reality is the situation is much more urgent than people realize because our reserves of fossil fuels, coal, oil, and gas are all finite. And we as a society need to start taking much bigger steps to coming up with alternatives to address that. And we have continued to ignore it, and we have continued to underinvest. And one of the reasons I'm here is to promote the idea of beginning to make up for that and to start investing more heavily, but also for people to become aware we're getting a greater and greater amounts of support for clean energy. And space-based solar power is one of the best hopes that we have, along with wind and terrestrial solar, for clean energy.
Okay, let me go to the other aspect of this, which is private sector. In what I think of as high tech, a lot of the 90s involved huge amounts of private capital flowing into different sorts of new technologies. So what's the relationship here? One might say, if this is such a great idea, why doesn't the private sector investor, venture capital, step up the plate and put in the money to make this thing happen? What would you say to that?
I think that there are a few things that have to fall into place that would help accelerate that. One, which I mentioned earlier, which we think is really important, is a high-profile, capture-the-imagination demonstration of space-based solar power. The idea there actually would be to have a low-Earth orbiting satellite that would deliver power to the Earth, actually to a variety of different countries as it orbits the planet, because if you're in a low-Earth orbit, you're constantly circling the Earth, you know, every 90 minutes, let's say, and you are going over many different nations. And so you could address the delivery of power to different societies, cultures, different villages, towns, homes, and we would like to deliver just a very small amount of power.
Let me just
to different locations.
Yeah, let me jump in there, because I know one of the issues in terms of rural poverty and lack of development in many cases is access to some sort of power. It's not so simple. And I presume this then would be relevant to that issue, or am I wrong?
It's extremely relevant. And actually, I'm glad you surfaced it. It's one of the most exciting and compelling aspects of space-based solar power. Compare it to fusion. Compared to many of the other energy sources that are out there, one of the dramatic aspects of space-based solar power is you can flexibly distribute power to wherever it may be needed. And that includes all kinds of underserved communities that are power-starved, power-hungry, both in the third world, but in the developing world, in the developed world, you know, in more rural areas, like Montana.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. I hadn't thought of it that way, but you're right.
Mm-hmm.
All right, you're looking for some sort of public funding to help do some demonstration work that would mobilize the community and potentially investment capital. So what's the current administration's view of all this? They're very interested in space. They're interested in space weapons technologies. What's going on with their views of this?
The current status is that space-based solar power at NASA, an announcement was made within the last, I think it was the last 3 or 4 months, that all funding for space-based solar power has been slashed practically to zero at NASA.
From what?
Under the current administration. And this was from a pre-existing and very nominal level on the order of only $5 to $10 million a year at the most.
Yeah,
basically gone down to zero.
What can you tell us about that, if anything? Was there any public discussion of the background is what I mean, or is it just assume, well, there it is, they're not interested?
There was very little public discussion. One of the fundamental problems here, and maybe I can put it into stark relief for you, is that public awareness is virtually zero on the opportunities of space-based solar power. It is very, very small. Most people are completely unfamiliar with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so when a government program goes up to the slate, if there isn't public support from congressional districts and from the people listening to this show and others, then it can go away easily. And despite what we've heard from the administration about their support for clean energy, this clearly was a step in the wrong direction. And I think public support is key. If you look at, for example, recently a Pluto mission was put back on the map in the space program because of public support.
A mission to the planet Pluto?
Yes. It had been taken off the drawing board. It was a $100 million program for NASA, and it went away. And it came back because they were able to obtain an enormous number of signatures. Because there's a great deal of popular interest in space exploration and understanding. If we could harness that kind of public support and power around space-based solar power, I think we'd be in a much better situation for the public funding side of the equation.
There was an interesting article in the National Review not too long ago about the Bush administration's interest in space-based weapons and beaming power. Part of that, I mean, part of that would involve from Earth these implements up there and vice versa. Is that not relevant to this? I would think they'd be very interested in this idea. Or is there some sort of fundamental difference in the technology and direction of it?
Well, the current administration on the energy front specifically, as I'm sure you're well aware, has been very focused on continuing to push forward with a coal, oil, and gas agenda. Even if you look at what has happened in the State of the Union address recently about a statement of increasing funding for fuel cells in automobiles, which is a good thing and we endorse it, that was a statement of support on the order of $1 billion. Every day, the Department of Defense is spending $1 billion. It's a daily budget for the Department of Defense. To put $1 billion into research on hydrogen-powered automobiles, it pales in comparison. Mm. I don't think there's yet an understanding of the importance of the scale and scope of investments that the government needs to be spearheading in conjunction with private industry to really make clean energy happen. I mean, we're talking about either drops in the bucket or programs getting closed down, all of which is a step in the wrong direction. We really need to make major, significant, strategic investments around clean energy, and we need public support together with those investments to really move the ball forward.
We are used in this country to strategic public investments, to use the phrase you just used. For example, I think of the highway system in this country is an immense, immense thing over many decades. And then that system is utilized by the private sector for business that provides jobs and profits to people. In biotech, a lot of fundamental research has historically been done by the academic university, publicly funded community. In nuclear power, huge investments, then the technologies used in the private sector and for profit-making ventures. Now, what would you say to somebody in the public who said, well, wait a second, if you want public investments to develop this technology, why shouldn't the public get some of the return instead of just having the technology then taken by, say, venture capital people who apparently made, let's say, in the 90s, a lot of money off this stuff? Now, does that make any sense, that question?
I think it does. And actually, you're mentioning the issue of job creation is another important part of this. To develop space-based solar power, it's not just an opportunity for clean energy, for flexibly distributing energy to different places all around the world that are currently greatly underserved. This is an economic opportunity, and it's an economic opportunity not just for investors, but for enormous amounts of job creation. To make space-based solar happen on the massive scale, to take it up to 10, 20, 30% of the world's energy usage, will require a new infrastructure of tremendous scale, which along with it would come with enormous amounts of job creation. I think we're at a time where people are hurting on the jobs front. People are losing their jobs. There is no real major waves of innovation driving huge new industries. This could be an enormous new opportunity for a huge new industry, and it would completely also change the political landscape, allowing us to really achieve energy independence and other countries to have energy independence and take us out of our current vicious cycle with oil and how it distorts politics and also affects adversely jobs and so on. So I think there would be a great deal of benefit from job creation and, as you say, finding ways to share the economic upside from this with the general public.
You're a guy that's deeply immersed in the technological implications of this stuff and the actual technology of it, and that's all very interesting. But let me ask you a personal question. You have many choices in the kind of work you focus on. Why does this particular thing interest you so?
This has interested me all the way back since I was 18 years old, which was 22 years ago. And ever since I first heard of the concept, it resonated for me at many levels. This was back in the oil crisis time period, as you had mentioned. And all the way back at that point, I had a feeling that energy independence was critical. Secondarily, space and our ability to move into the high frontier, as we call it, is a tremendously exciting opportunity, but I do believe it has to be rooted and grounded in an economic jobs creation, industry creation, opportunity, and space-based power is one of those. Space exploration is most likely not.
Why does that excite you, though? When you talk, I look at you. You get pretty excited about this. Why?
Because I'm a believer that we can make the world a better place. I am very excited and actually quite passionate about wanting to see this happen. For me personally, it's a long-term commitment. I think this will take decades to come to fruition, but the only way it's going to happen is one step at a time, and I think it's time for us to take the next step.
Eric Hoffert, I regret to say we're out of time. I'd like to thank you very much for being with us on Home Ground.
It's my pleasure, Brian.
To our listeners, many thanks for being with us. We hope you'll join us next week. Home Ground is a pre-recorded Artemis Common Ground production. Sandra Dalpagetto, producer. All opinions expressed are solely the responsibility of Home Ground. We welcome your suggestions for new programs. Write to us at P.O. Box 748, Helena, Montana, 59624, or email at brian@artemisgroup.org. This program is in part made possible by a grant from the Montana Committee for the Humanities.